Hey, take out your bulletin if you would. Let's look at a few announcements real quick. Notice that in our bulletin, teenagers, we meet 7 o'clock Thursday night. We had some new kids join us this last week. We're excited about what God's going to do with the youth group this year. We have some fun plans of not only some fun things to do, but some ministry opportunities as well. And we're excited about that for the teens coming up this summer and this spring. Please note there in your bulletin that on the 16th, next Sunday, we have missionary Jim and Sarah Engel with us. I went to school with Sarah and sort of with Jim. He was ahead of me. But they'll be here next Sunday with their little daughter, Josephine. And to hear the opportunity they have that God has given them to go to Germany. And then on the 18th, ladies, you have your Bob Evans Fellowship at 5:30. Are you working that night? Tuesday night? No? Okay. Good. So that's Tuesday night, January 18th. So that's coming up. Men's Chili Cook-Off is January 28th. Everyone's invited to come and taste the chili. But the guys are going to compete for best chili, and we'll let certain people be judges. And we'll have our... Huh? Charlie's going to make some out of the can. So I've got to still come up with an impartial judge. But a little harder this time. Well, it's got to be someone outside the church. That's the tricky part. So I don't want to be partial. Last year we had Josh and his wife Heather Martin from Lee Summit with us last year. So I got to track someone down this year. But we're excited about that coming up. Then note in your bulletin, February 6th, we have an evening communion service. And I'll try and put that in there a month ahead of time so everyone knows when that's going to take place. And you won't be asking questions about it. That way you know when it's going to happen. There in your bulletin, it says we're supposed to have a business meeting tonight. Obviously, that's been postponed. We'll take care of that next week. Thank you for being here and wanting to be a part of that, though. Our men's prayer time each Sunday morning at 9:15. We began this morning with a group of 4 guys. Appreciate your willingness to be a part of that. We're excited to see how God's going to use that in the ministry of our church and watch it grow. There's a list there in the foyer on the different nursery schedules and special music schedules and so forth. Please make sure you pick those up and know what's going on. And once again, just a brief update. Last week, we did have our deacons election, and all 5 deacons are back in, whether you want them or not. So they are back in. That's David Bennett, Jim Frazier, Lyle Humphrey, Jonathan Humphrey, and Ron Grimm. So thank you, men, for your willingness to serve. This evening, my message title is, which is going to be brief, because I figured our annual budget meeting will be taking up primarily most of the time, so I'm not going to keep you long this evening, is called Facing the Giants. If you know anything about giants, you know that they are individuals who are quite tall. And the tallest man alive in recent times died actually in 1940. He was 8 feet tall, 11 inches. I'm 6'3", and I got to looking, and I am the same height as the tallest female tennis player. So I guess that's not too spectacular, but... recently the man who was the tallest just passed away, and he was 7'11", I believe, so a little bit taller than I am. But it's interesting because my father is about 5'10", and my mom's probably about 5'4". So I don't know where I got my 6'3" at, but I tower over both of my parents. And it was funny growing up because my mother I'd be sitting down, and my mother would come up to me and she'd say, "Nathan, I want you to do this," and I'd do something, and I said, "And you want me to do what?" I never intimidated her. That was not good for me. But tonight we want to look at the story of Goliath and David. So take your Bible, join me in 1 Samuel chapter 12. 17. 1 Samuel chapter 17. It's in your Old Testament, one of the first books in your Bible. 1 Samuel chapter 17. Now you've heard this story a gazillion times. You grew up in Sunday school hearing it. You've probably heard it preached on. You've heard about it in children's church. You've heard about it in vacation Bible school. But this evening, I'm hoping to put a new twist on it. I'm hoping what I have to say to you might be a little different and a little different take on what you've ever heard about this story. Remember, David was probably about 16, 15, 17 years old when this took place. He was a shepherd boy. His brothers had gone off to war. They were at war with the Philistine nation. And they had gone off to war. Everyone above a certain age was supposed to go and enlist in the army and be a part of these wars. And his brothers were gone. And David was left at home. And he was taking care of the family's sheep, the family's flock. And his father came to him and gave him special instructions. So we're going to pick it up. 1 Samuel chapter 17 this evening. Now the Philistines gathered their armies together to battle and were gathered at Socho, which belongs to Judah. They encamped between Soko and Azekah and Ephnes Damim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together, and they encamped in the valley of Elah and drew up in battle array against the Philistines. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the old type of wars and civil wars and the Revolutionary War. They didn't do guerrilla warfare like they do today, where they're hiding in bushes and ready to jump out at you and shoot you. What they did was they lined up in rows, and they marched forward in droves. I think that's just the stupidest way to go to war, but that's what they did. And I'm a really big action movie person, and I like to watch the old movies of the Greeks at war and so forth, and they'd have the men in front with the shields, and they'd have staves and spears, and they'd get down, and they'd hold that shield out, and they'd poke their spear through, and that was their first line of defense. And I'm like, that's not going to help very long. And you watch this other army just come running, and they plow into the shields, and it's a massive, gory scene. And that's what we have here. We have these two armies lined up, one on one side of a hill, or a valley, one on the other side of the valley, and they are lined up, and they're ready to march forward in the war, given the opportunity, given the call. So we have here then, they were gathered together and encamped in the valley of Elah. They drew up in battle array against the Philistines. Verse 3, the Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, with a valley between them. And a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, the city where he's from, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. A cubit is the earliest source of measurement known to mankind. A cubit was simply measured from the middle of the forefinger to the elbow, about 18 inches. So you figure 6 times 18 is 120. Divide by 12 inches, you've got what? 18 times 6, 120. 9 feet. 9 feet. And a span, then, is from your tip of your thumb to the tip of your pinky finger, which is 9 inches. So 9 feet, 9 inches was how tall this champion of the Philistines was. Now, I'm 6'3", so put another 3 feet on top of me, along with another 6 inches, and you have the height of Goliath. He was a monster. Now, you know, we see cartoons, and we see the pictures of, you know, we had in Sunday school this individual who looks to be, you know, 20 feet tall compared to this 4-foot little boy. You know, I don't think that wasn't the right way. It was actually a 9-foot-9 individual, most likely up against a 15-year-old. Mark, how old are you? 18. So about Mark's height. You're 19? Okay. So just a little shorter than Mark. Not that Mark's very tall in the first place. But about Mark's height, coming up against a 9-foot-9 individual. So we have this champion. He comes out, verse 5 says, he had on a bronze helmet on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. Now, that's not envelopes and bills, by the way. That's a chain-link armor. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had bronze armor on his legs and a bronze javelin or spear between his shoulders. Now, the staff of the spear was like a weaver's beam. Now, if you've ever watched a weaver, you know, they have the big loom in front of them, and they're weaving the string in between each one. And the weaver's staff was huge. It was quite long. It was a weaver's beam. It says, and his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels, and a shield bearer went before him. His shield was so big that he had someone else carry the shield for him. So you can see how important this guy is. Verse 8 says, then he stood and cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, why have you come out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourself and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if you prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us. And the Philistines said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we might fight together. Now, you know, I picture this 9'9", big, gigantic guy with a huge, deep voice. You know, maybe and maybe he had a really squeaky Mickey Mouse voice, too. But I always picture him as, Earl Jones? Jones Earl? I can't think of his first name. What is it? Earl Ray Jones. He's got that really deep voice. He's got a CD recording of the Bible. James Earl Jones. That's it. He's the guy who played Darth, or did the voice for Darth Vader, right? You know, he's got a CD recording of the books of the Bible, the Bible on CD. And once you hear that, it's like the voice of God speaking. You know, it's just wow. You know, it's what you imagine a giant to sound like. You know, when he stands there and says, "Bring me a fight. You know, bring someone out that will fight against me. If he wins, we'll be his servant and your servants. And if we win, you'll be our servants." This is a gigantic man with this huge deep voice, and you know, we're just playing along because he might have sounded like this too. You know, we don't really know. That chainmail might have been in places it shouldn't have been, but he might have squeaked a little. But he says, "I defy the armies of Israel this day." And verse 11 says, "When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. They were scared of this giant that stood before them." Now think about Saul for a moment. Remember, Saul was the first king of Israel. The people had demanded that Samuel give them a king. God had chosen Saul. Remember, Saul was taller than all the other men. He was very handsome. He was good looking. He seemed to be smarter, although his actions never proved to be that way. Remember, when they went to make him king, they had to go find him. He was hiding among all the baggage, all the luggage. He was an individual that looked the part but wasn't going to play the part very well. He had been chosen by God, and over and over again he had defied God. He didn't do what God had wanted him to do. We have the account where they were told to go and destroy the city and destroy everything, and yet they still took the king and they took the cattle from the city that they weren't supposed to take. They were supposed to have destroyed it. Remember when Samuel came, he says, "God told you to destroy the king and everybody in the city and all the animals and everything." He says, why do I hear the bleating of sheep? Why do I hear the mooing of cows?" "Well, you see, Samuel, we decided to keep the best for God." Well, is that what God wanted? No. God told him to destroy it. So Saul's an interesting individual who knew what he was supposed to do, but oftentimes didn't do it. And so he's had one-on-one interactions over and over again with God. And here he's standing along with the rest of Israel. When they've heard the words of the Philistines, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Verse 12 says, "Now David was the son of the Ephratite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and who had 8 sons. And the man was old, advanced in years in the days of Saul. The 3 oldest sons of Jesse had gone to follow Saul to battle. The names of the 3 sons who went to battle were Eliab, the firstborn, next to him Abinadab, and the 3rd, Shema. David was the youngest, and the 3 oldest followed Saul. But David occasionally went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And the Philistines drew near and presented himself 40 days, morning and evening. Then Jesse said to the son David, 'Take now for your brothers an ephah, or a loaf of this dried grain, and these 10 loaves, or this bag of dried grain, excuse me, and these 10 loaves, and run to your brothers at the camp. And carry these 10 cheeses to the captain of their 1,000, and see how how your brothers fare, and bring back news of them.'" He says, "Go to the battle front, find your brothers, give them this food, then come back and tell me how the war's going, how things are moving, you know. They didn't have CNN 24 hours, you know. They didn't have all this stuff that we have, you know. Yesterday when that I believe it was a senator was shot from Arizona, you know, as soon as it happened, the world heard about it. You could read about it online. You could see it on the news and everything. This sort of thing, you had to travel a ways to find out what was going on. And David was about to do that. He was going to go to the battlefront, take some food to his brothers, and take some cheese to the captain of his brothers, and find out how his brothers were doing and come back with the news. Verse 19. "Now Saul and they, all the men of Israel, were in the valley of Elah, fighting with the Philistines." And that doesn't necessarily mean that they were already at arms and fighting, but they were already arrayed to fight. "So David rose early in the morning, left the sheep with a keeper, with a hireling, and took the things, and went as Jesse had commanded him, and he came to the camp as the army was going out to the fight and shouting for the battle." They basically lined up and shouted curse words back and forth, you know. "You stink, you know, you're a weenie," you know, back and forth, kind of taunting them. And verse 21 says, "For Israel and the Philistines had drawn up in battle array, army against army. And David left his supplies in the hands of the supply keeper, ran to the army, and came and greeted his brothers. Then as he talked with them, there was the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines, and he spoke according to the same words, so David heard them." He'd been saying the same thing for 40 days. "Give me someone to fight against. You win, we'll be your slaves. We win, you be our slaves. Let's do it man to man. We don't need to waste all these extra people's lives. Let's just do it straight up." David hears it, verse 23, and verse 24 says, "And all the men of Israel, when they had heard the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid." They were all traitors. They ran from the battlefront. They ran to get away. They ran to hide. "So the men of Israel said, 'Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. Well, duh. And it shall be that the man who kills the king will enrich with who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches, will give him his daughter, and give his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel. Now that was a big thing. Remember how Daniel, if he could have told the king what the dreams and the visions had meant, Daniel was going to be bestowed upon with the purple robe of royalty and the chain link necklace of authority. And, you know, that was his reward for doing what the king had wanted him to do. Here the king is giving him a reward of allowing him to have great riches. He's going to marry the daughter of the princess. And he's going to give the man's father's house exemption from taxes. I wouldn't mind not having to pay taxes. I don't know about the rest of you. But back in this time, it was more about possessions than it was money. They came and took things to pay off your taxes. So they were this, the home of this individual would have exemption from paying. And verse 26 says, then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, what shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine, this one that's not marked as an Israelite, for this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him in the manner, saying, so shall it be done for the man who kills him. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men. David was talking and asking this question to the other individuals. And Eliab's anger was aroused against David, and he said, why did you come down here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? You know, that's our money. That's where our livelihood is, those sheep. Why are you here? Why aren't you back helping Dad? He says, I know your pride, and I know your insolence of your heart. For you have come down just to see what was going on. You've come down to see the battle. You wanted to come down and see what was taking place. You left the sheep all alone. You're just a little boy. He doesn't know better. You've come and made trouble. You're just down here to see what's going on. And verse 29, David says, what have I done now? Is there not a cause? Is there not a reason maybe that God has me here? Then he turned from him toward another and said the same thing. And these people answered him as the first ones did. He says, what's going to happen to the man who kills this individual? Now when the words which David spoke were heard, they reported them to Saul, and he sent for him. There weren't many other people around asking, so what do I get if I kill Goliath? There were other individuals sitting around saying, what's in it for me, or what's in it for the individual who takes care of this individual? The news comes to Saul, and they reported him to Saul, and he sent for him. Verse 32, then David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. David says, I'll do it. And Saul said to David, you are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are a youth. You're just a boy. And he a man of war. He's been trained his entire life from his youth. But David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. I'm not so sure I'd do that. A lion comes and takes one of my sheep, I'd probably say, oops, oh well, bye-bye. Enjoy your meal. I ain't going after no lion. Not to mention the fact that by the time I probably caught up with the lion probably would have already ate the lamb anyways. You know, we always picture that David got his little sheep back. Probably not. They're probably ripped to shreds, same as the bear, you know. And he's telling Saul that he's taking care of these sheep and he's killed a lion and a bear. He says, I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. So this one, it actually did live, or at least he got the parts of the lamb back. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard, by the chin, and struck and killed it. Your servant has killed both a lion and a bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine, this enemy of ours, will be like one of them, seeing he defies the armies of the living God. Moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go, and the Lord Jehovah be with you. So Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put on a bronze helmet on his head. He also clothed him with a coat of mail, and David fastened his sword to his armor and tried to walk. So here's David. He's used to wearing these simple clothes out in the field, and now Saul's saying, okay, I'm going to give you my armor so you can go out and fight against Goliath. So he puts on this helmet of bronze, which is quite heavy, puts on this chest of chain mail, which is quite heavy. Remember, Goliath had it on his legs too, so he probably had it on his legs. Shods his shins with the special the armor. Takes a sword to his armor, and he tries to walk. Clank. clank, clank. He's not used to wearing this armor. He's not trained to wear it. He doesn't know exactly how to take care of it and use it the best he can. So David fastened the sword to his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. He had not used them before. And David said to Saul, I cannot walk with these, for I have not tested them. I've never used them. So David took them off. Now he's going to go out and fight a 9'9" individual with no armor on. Then, that's kind of like saying, I'm going to go fight a tank with a sword, you know. So then he took his staff in his hand, and he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook. And that's such a wonderful story we have when we're kids growing up. We hear about these 5 little stones that David took from the creek, and he put them in his sling, and he went round and round, and, you know, I don't think these were little stones. Most archaeologists talk about that in the history of slingshots, they were most likely about the size of a baseball or a softball. They were rocks that when they hit, they hurt, and that was what they were meant to do. You know, if I threw a pebble at you, it probably wouldn't hurt very much. But David had a rock, a smooth stone, it says, and he takes them and he puts them in his shepherd's bag and his pouch which he had, and his sling was in his hand, and he drew near the Philistine. So down into the valley he goes, down from the other side of the valley comes the Philistine. Verse 42 says, or 41 says, so the Philistine came and began drawing near to David. Can you imagine what it's like to be seeing one individual coming down one side of the mountain, one individual coming down from the other side of the mountain, and from far away, it looks like a normal-sized individual. And you get down to the bottom where this creek is, and here's David, and here's Goliath. And Goliath looks at him, and he says here in verse 42, and when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him. He probably scoffed. That's kind of what that idea is there. He looked at him and said, you've got to be kidding me. For he was only a youth, ruddy and good-looking. So the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord Jehovah of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied, whom you put down, whom you have made fun of, whom you have disgraced. I come to you in his name. Verse 46, this day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. That's pretty bold for a young little guy talking to a 9'9" individual. He says, and this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. There are situations that you will come across in life that you cannot fight with a sword and spear. You will not be able to go to your power bill or to your water bill and tear it up with a sword and say, it's done, it's over with. You have to pay it, you know. There are situations that you just can't go to your boss and say that you have a problem with another coworker and walk in carrying a spear, you know. It doesn't work that way. So what we have here is David is saying to Goliath, he says, you come to me with swords and with spears and with javelins. He says, but I don't come to you with a sword and a spear, but I come because the Lord, and the battle is already the Lord's. He will give you in our hands. He has already taken care of the situation. He already knows what needs to take place and what's going to happen. So it was when the Philistines arose and came and drew near to meet David, that David hurried and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. Then David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone, and he slung it and struck the Philistine in his forehead, so the stone sank into his forehead, and he fell on his face to the earth. Doesn't say that killed him. It just knocked him out cold. He falls to the ground. Therefore David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword, obviously remember David didn't have one, took the Goliath sword, drew it out of the sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. They ran. Here was their master, not necessarily master, but their mascot. He was everything to them and boom, he's gone. Now what? Now it's time to turn and run like little deer with your white tails flagging up in the air as you run away. So David has won. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and struck the Philistine and killed him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. So he runs over, takes the Philistine's sword, cuts off his head, and kills him. The Philistines run. You know, the men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted, "Hoo-hoo! You know, we're on the winning side. Now it's time to go forward. David's taking care of the hard part. Now it's time for us. We've got the victory. Let's chase down these Philistines and destroy them." So they pursued the Philistines as far as the entrance of the valley and to the gates of Ekron, which was a city of the Philistines. And the wounded of the Philistines fell along the road to Shaarim, even as far as Gath and Ekron. Then the children of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines, and they plundered their tents. They went through the camp of the Philistines and took stuff, the gold and the raiments and the clothing and the tents and the cloth and so forth, and the bedding and so forth. And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his armor in his tent. When Saul saw David going out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, "Abner, whose son is this youth?" And Abner said, "As your soul lives, O king, I do not know." So the king said, "Inquire whose son this young man is." Then as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistines, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, "Whose son are you, young man?" So David answered, "I am the son of your servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite." It's interesting that as troublesome times come into our lives, with giant problems and situations that we can't understand, things that come into our lives we sometimes call the unknowns that we don't expect. You know, just a week ago, TJ and his girlfriend were not expecting to be in a car accident. They hadn't looked at their calendar and said, "Okay, on this date at this time, we're going to be at this corner, and you'll be at this corner at the same time, and we're going to have an accident right there." You know, some of you have lost jobs recently, and you weren't planning on that happening. You have things that have... Others of you have things, situations that have occurred that were unknown, that you didn't know were going to happen. Troublesome times, fiery situations, like our song said a little bit ago. But in Mark chapter 10, verse 27, it says, "With God, all things are possible." Who would have thought that a ruddy little 15, 16, 17-year-old boy could have destroyed a 9-foot-9 giant? Doesn't happen every day. Doesn't happen anywhere in the chronicles of the world that I've ever read outside of the Bible. We have this passage that's been given to us so to show that God can do whatever He wants with whomever He wishes. We also are reminded in Romans chapter 8, verse 31, if God is for us, who can be against us? Whatever situation might rise up in your life, God is on your side. The old situation says, you know, the old saying is, we've read the back of the book and we win. You know, we know what's going to happen to us when we die. We know where we're going for all eternity. So what if I've got bills that I can't pay? So what if I've got problems in my relationship? So what? I know what's going to happen in the end. You know, we learned this morning there's no reason, no sense in worrying. It doesn't do you any good. It doesn't get you anywhere. You can't earn money from it or anything like that. It's worthless. We're reminded in Genesis 18, verse 14, as Sarah is laughing in the face of the angel of the Lord, when the angel of the Lord has told her that God has decided that she's going to have a baby. Remember what God says? Is there anything too hard for God? Is there anything outside of the realm of God that He cannot do? If God is the maker of all things, certainly He can do whatever He wishes, whenever He wishes, wherever He wishes. So as you go through situations in life, remember that God's in control. He's the one that's got the possibilities. He's the one that's on our side. There's nothing too hard for Him to do. He can do whatever He wishes. In Mark chapter 19 real quick. Mark chapter 19, verse 26 tells us... Well, that's not going to help me any, because there is no Mark chapter 19. let's see what I meant by that then. Maybe Matthew. Matthew chapter 19, verse 26. But Jesus looked at them and said to them, "With men this is impossible, but with God all things are possible." It's interesting that that's recorded for us at least twice in the Gospels, in God's Word. You know, we read, Paul writes, "Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say, rejoice." If he says it twice, don't you think that's kind of important? So if we have two different disciples of Christ marking it in God's Word, saying that we should be realizing that with God everything is possible, with man all, you know, it's impossible, I think that's a point he's trying to get across to us. That God has the ability to do all things, and whatsoever He wants to do. Luke chapter 18, verse 27, tells us, "The things which are impossible with men are possible with God." Well, now there's three times in the Gospels Well, that must mean it's really important for us to understand that with God, he can do whatever he wishes. One last thing real quick. Turn with me to 2 Corinthians chapter 12. It's interesting to note also, by the way, that Goliath is not the only giant mentioned in the Bible. There are actually several different groups of giants mentioned in the Bible. And if you really start studying, you'll find out that Goliath had four sons. He also had a brother named Lami, who had six fingers on each hand and six fingers on each toe. We find that in 2 Samuel chapter 21. But I think a little bit of inbreeding or something went on there. But, you know, we have lots of we have lots of giants in the Bible. And not only are there physical giants, but there's also spiritual giants in our life on a daily basis. But 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 9 tells us. I need to get into 2 Corinthians, not 1 Corinthians. Doesn't help to be in 1 Corinthians. Start verse 7. And lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of the revelations, a thorn in the flesh was given me. Paul's saying that he knows a man, most likely it's he himself, who has seen a vision of heaven, and he's saying that what he saw was not to be told to other people. And just so that he didn't tell other people about what he saw or whatever this man saw, he has been given a special problem. He calls it a thorn in the flesh, be it a physical or spiritual problem, whatever it is. We aren't sure, but it says that a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan, to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure, in case I get too high and too mighty just because of what I've seen. Concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord three times that it might depart from me, and he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. When you are weak, when you are out of strength, when you are out of energy, when you don't know where else you can turn or where else you can go, remember it is then that God's grace is the greatest. It is during that time that his grace, his love, his concern, his mercy for us is sufficient for us. We don't need anything more during that time. But have you ever noticed that it's only oftentimes during those times when we are down and out that we actually sense the presence of God at times? It's during that time that we turn to plan B. Okay, God, I don't know what else to do, so I'm turning to you now. My checkbook can't help me. My job can't help me. My relationships can't help me. My friends can't help me. I'm now turning to you, and it's your problem now. And it's then and only then that God can work in our lives, because his grace is sufficient. He is able to help us. So whatever giant you're facing in your life, whatever situation is standing before you, remember that it's not too big for you to conquer, because on your side you have God. You have the one who created the situation and allowed it to come into your life in the first place. Looking at the life of Job, do you think he really enjoyed what he was going through? Probably not. But God gave him the strength to endure it. God gave him the ability to go through it. God gave him the provision for the things that he needed to take care of what was needed to take care of and get through the situation that he was being tested upon, because his grace is sufficient. Let's pray. Father, thank you.
Name. Amen.